Dr. Bob Frelick appeared on this radio show not that long ago, actually quite some time ago, and with Terry Savage and I, he said this.
So in my mind, the combination of a series of rate cuts along with an uptick in mergers and acquisitions and initial public offerings, I think you're going to see a Dow Jones Industrial Average approach 44,000 by the end of the year.
Wow, said everyone. But it wasn't just here that he said it. What was the organization that he also said it to, Terry?
So every year, the Executives Club of Chicago, and if you want to make reservations now, it's always sold out, executivesclub.org, has an economic forecast luncheon. I have been moderating that event for more than 40 years. And Dr. Bob Frelick has been a regular for the last 16 years. And I will say it's not just this year he was outrageous. I will have to say for the last 6 or 7 or 8 years, back when the Dow was 15,000, he proved optimistic and correct. You know, the markets had a tremendous run. But this year in January, I'm telling you, I was totally shocked because the four forecasters are Diane Swonk, economist, John Rogers of Ariel Capital. Dr. Bob not only gives a forecast, but then he gives some incredible investing ideas. So we'll have some of that. But I hear we have the tape of that actual forecast in January.
Dow at the year end.
Lucky numbers of the year of the dragon are 1, 6, and 7. So if you extrapolate that to 16.7% of the Dow at 38,000, it puts it at 44,000.
Whoa! Dow?
It'll be 44,000.
Just show of hands. Could he possibly be right? Could the Dow hit 44,000? How many people are true believers in Bob? No one!
No. I mean, remember, I'm sitting in front of a huge ballroom of 1,200, 1,300 people. I remember the shock. We were at Dow, just about Dow 38,000. It was 37,683, according to my notes last year. All right. That's the setup for the amazing Dr. Bob Frelick.
Dr. Bob Frelick is here along with Terry Savage, the money lady. You know Terry on Wednesdays from terrysavage.com. She visits with us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And also here is that man, Dr. Bob Frelick, who you may now know these days as the chairman, the CEO, the president and owner of the Kane County Cougars, the author of 7 books on finance, 40 years on Wall Street, among positions he's held chief strategist at Deutsche Bank, etc. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
So you mentioned 167. That sounds kind of an odd calculation. How did you come up with 44,000?
Well, the 167 are the year of this is the year of the dragon.
Yes, but promise me you're not making investing advice based on that.
No. But what I am doing is looking at different things to pull things together, and I feel that China is really one of the most important attributes of the market overall. So, you know, I take a close look at what China's doing, what I think China's doing, and even though with the political unrest of what they're having there, it's the amount that they produce, the amount that they consume. And so I was looking at, you know, so the year of the dragon, what are the lucky numbers? And, you know, the lucky numbers are 1, 6, and 7. And I was looking at a market forecast between, you know, 43,000, 45,000. And all of a sudden, when I looked at those numbers and said, oh, 16.7% of 38,000 gets me to 44. That's how I ended up. That's how I ended up the number somewhere between 43
and 45. You reverse engineered it.
Yeah, I reverse engineered it. Yeah, exactly.
It's more than that. Three years ago, it was, you told me to remember your forecast for that year. That was 3 years ago. 401k, you said. So it would be 40,100 was that year.
We didn't hit that year.
No.
That was the down year.
We did not. I learned more, actually. You know, as an investment strategist, I think really any role you have in life, you don't learn as much when you're right as you do when you're wrong. You know, when you're right, you're just busy celebrating. When you're wrong, you know, that 401k.
But on this prediction, I didn't hear you. So you said that you thought interest rates and emerging markets would propel the market. I didn't hear you say that Donald Trump's election or domestic affairs would propel the market. Yeah. What got us to 44,000 this
week?
Well,
I think, well, this week, clearly, it's the market looking forward. The market is a forward-looking mechanism. You know, it's not looking, so it's saying, okay, there's been a change, there's been a political change. What could that mean for the market? And so what the market is doing now is saying, well, it's probably going to mean, could mean, you know, there's a lot that has to happen. But the market itself is saying, you know, less regulation. Less regulation is a huge boom for financial services. services companies, financial services companies, touch every other company. So whenever you have something, if you have a change politically that's going to affect an industry or a sector that has its tentacles in all the other sectors, it tends to lift everything. In other words, if something's just maybe helping industrials, it doesn't have an impact to the broader market. But when you're doing something potentially with fewer regulations and a more friendly regulatory environment in the financial and banking system, that affects every business, every sector that's out there. And I think that's part of the enthusiasm you're seeing in the market.
We got a million questions for Bob Frelick. Terry Savage, the money lady at terrysavage.com. Wednesdays on the Wintrust Business Lunch, invited Dr. Bob Frelick into our studio today, and here we sit.
Yeah, Dr. Bob made that Dow 44,000 forecast last January. This year's Executives Club forecast is January 14th. I'm not letting you give your number away yet because there are thousands of people that try to get tickets for this lunch and to hear what you're going to say. But you also came back in the middle, in June, I think it was. I look back at the dates. The Dow started the year at our luncheon last year in January. It was 37,683. And it touched just 38,000. I mean, it had been higher, close to 40,000, and backed off in June. And I think we called you because everybody texted me or put on my terrysavage.com blog, well, what does Dr. Bob say? And we got you back on the air. You sent me a beautiful email that was a long one. I won't bother reading it. It said, Terry, we've lived through this, in all my 40 years in business. And look where we are. We're relatively at all-time highs. Is that your general optimism that made you reinforce the Dow 44,000 in June when everybody was going, oops, it's almost the end of the world?
No, it's the realization that you have to get the direction right. And I felt very strongly that I had the direction right. You know, I knew the market was going higher because rates were coming down. That's a catalyst for the market. Now, I may have been wrong in the number of rate cuts that are going to happen, but I knew I had the direction right. Rates were coming down. I knew I had the direction of inflation right. Inflation was coming down. Now, it may not come down as fast as a lot of people wanted, but if you have the direction correct on interest rates and inflation, it's pretty easy to figure out what the direction of the market's going to be. The market's going to move higher. Now, we may argue and have great debates on what's the velocity of that movement. But the critical thing is you got to get the direction of the markets correct. And if you get the directions correct, then you have external catalysts. And John, like we were talking earlier, the election, I consider that an external catalyst. You know, gave it an extra, 1,500 points. But it didn't cause the market to go up. What caused the market to go up was the falling interest rates, the lower inflation, which also bodes well into profits. And so why is profitability picked up in so many of the companies? Well, they're paying less for the loans that they have out there, and their materials are costing less. So it's a combination of things that put all together. But the key is the direction. You got to spend all your time on the direction.
So let me ask you some what ifs, all right? I'll give you three. You can pick and choose, but I want to get all of them. They are the national debt. Oh, my goodness, we have to finance more. Immigration. Oh, my goodness, we're going to deport all the workers we need. And tariffs, oh my goodness, it's like going to cause inflation. It's a tax on everything we buy. Pick one of those and tell me why that won't just derail the direction you like.
Yeah, I think all of them potentially derail the direction because they play on the sense of the investor losing confidence. But at the end of the day, I will touch on each of them. Look, the deficit, is it too high? Yes, it is. It's always been too high. You can go back at any point in time in history, and we're going to have the same argument 100 years ago, 150 years ago. And so everything becomes relative. And what's relative now is you look at the foundation of how do we pay off that debt. And I look at two things. We're the strongest, most secure economy in the entire world. You know, we just are. The rule of law still governs here. You know, we're the safest place for people to invest. And at the end of the day, why I don't believe the deficit is important as some people think is if there's one place everyone around the world wants to invest, when they have to invest in the safest place ever, it's the United States. It's our bond market. And so whenever you de facto are always going to have money coming in, there's always going to be money coming in to fund that deficit. So yes, it's too high. I'm not going to defend it. It needs to come down. But at the end of the day, why it's not impacting the market is because everyone around the world, when they're looking for the safest investment, they all come to the exact
same
conclusion.
What about depleting our workforce?
Yeah. Well, depleting the workforce obviously is an issue. How do we deal with immigration, and how do we make it work that's fair? fair for everyone, fair for people coming in, fair for people that are already here. And I think that, you know, what ends up happening is we look at the extremes of both. I don't think the extremes of either are going to what's going to drive the market or drive what happens.
Do the two of you suspect that they're in fact not going to be able to deport the migrants that are here the way they say they are? So this concern that we're going to lose the workforce is moot because it just can't or won't happen.
I think that in every election in my 40 years on Wall Street, what happens to get elected and what happens in the reality after the election doesn't always resemble each other.
Okay, but that's almost a mechanical problem. They simply can't accomplish it. But they could raise tariffs if Congress wanted to. What do you make of the drag that would put on the economy?
Well, I think potentially it makes a drag, but in the longer run, it doesn't make a drag as long as it makes you more competitive. And so, you know, with every fundamental economic shift, and raising tariffs certainly is a huge economic shift, in the short run, sometimes you have to pay a price, and that price may mean that there will be higher prices as those tariffs are put in place. But I'm a real believer of the business in this country that if you give them a problem, they find a solution. So if it's going to cost me more to import materials and supplies from China, I'm going to find an alternative source, or I'm going to source more stuff here. So,
but those will be more expensive when you do. I will pay more for those at the store, right?
I think you'll pay more for that in terms of labor, what you have in the United States, but you won't in terms of transport to get it here. So it becomes various pieces. So
you don't think inflation? You don't think this would be inflationary?
I think that every economist will think it's inflationary because they sit in an ivory tower. But if you think about theoretically, that's one component. A tariff is one component.
I find this so fascinating. I think Dr. Bob cornered the market on optimism. So before we go to break, which I know is going to happen, I want to ask you one more big question. Then we'll go on about the markets and so forth. So there are a lot of people out there that are thinking, I'll make it extreme. Oh, my goodness, the end of democracy. Look at the people being put into these jobs. It's extreme. It's whatever negative you want to say. In addition to all your economic forecasting, does what's going on in Washington this week or will go on in the next six weeks, does that give you pause about being optimistic for 2025?
No, it doesn't. Because I've watched the market perform well under Republicans and Democrats and conservatives and liberals and moderates. And what really, again, I don't want to keep harping on the same thing, but it really is always about the economy that drives the market. It's not who's sitting in the White House and not which political party's in control. They have a great influence on what sectors or what industries within the market may do well. But at the end of the day, the fundamentals, they're never wrong. It's about interest rates. It's about inflation. It's about unemployment. You know, and when we start looking at those factors, and I look at those, you know, I still think rates are going to fall. I still think inflation, even with tariffs, John, I think are going to continue to trend down. I think the employment picture gets brighter. I think we bring a lot of the onshoring happening here, and I think that bodes well. It's not going to happen overnight. The market's not going up every day, every month, but fundamentally, I like the fundamentals regardless of the political
landscape. Dr. Bob Frelick is in our studio. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you for that. This is John Williams. It's a Wednesday. Terry Savage is on with us in studio most Wednesdays. Today's no exception. The exception is she has invited Dr. Bob Frelick. You know him as the owner of the Kane County Cougars. He's made that a successful baseball team, won the championship. He's the author of 7 books, and for 40 years, he was a strategist on Wall Street, Deutsche Bank, among other holdings. What are some of the names that you drop when people say, where did you work or what did you do?
Here in Chicago, Kemper Funds, and then Kemper merged with Scudder Investments in Hartford.
You've been sharing with us your optimism for the market. You famously predicted on this show that it would hit 44,000. You were right. And you are optimistic about, one would even say bullish about 2025 based on what we heard. Would you be investing people's money that way then if you were running one of these funds?
Oh, I certainly would be. But I also think that you can't be greedy. This is not the lottery. This is your life savings. And so, you know, even though I'm very, very optimistic about the market, I still think you have to diversify. Asset allocation is key. So no matter how excited I am about the market, I want to have some in stocks. I want to have have some in bonds. I want to have some in real estate. Sure. And I always want to have some in cash. So the
chicken money, that is. Excuse me.
We call that chicken money on this show. Okay. Yeah. And Terry, I know you've got points you want to bring up to him, but just about that, are there parts of the economy, sectors, if you will, that you are particularly bullish on in 25?
Well, there are two. One, I think the consumer is going to surprise a lot of people. So any consumer discretionary areas, I think, are going to do very, very well. And when we talked about earlier on the show with the potential lower regulations or a reshuffling of the regulatory environment, I think banks and financial services are going to do extremely well. So I would probably, as an investor, look at bookending those two sectors, you know, consumer discretionary banks and financials. I think you'll be a very happy investor in 2020.
We just got a report today. Consumer credit card debt is at an all-time high, $1.17 trillion, I think it is. And there's been a lot of concerns about consumers being tapped out. Is this just like a spend until the end kind of a mentality or what?
No, you know, look, I'm not going to defend how much money is in credit card debt. It's just like the national deficit. It's too high. It needs to come down. I get it. But here's the thing. Interest rates are coming down. So as interest rates come down, there may be a regulatory environment that says, you know, we're charging too much for that credit card debt. So the combination of maybe a geopolitical change in that area plus rates are coming down. And at the end of the day, I'm not a political strategist, but I really think it was the consumer that drove all of the political changes in this country. I really believe and always have believed people vote with their pocketbook. And, I know there's a great theory on Wall Street that talks about the misery index, which is all you got to do is look at the rate of inflation and the unemployment rate, and you'll figure out if consumers are happy or not. I think that's misleading. I think you have to add interest rates onto it. And to me, and what I did is I looked at what was happening. I looked at high interest rates, which means everything you financed, your house, your car, is costing you more. High inflation, high unemployment. There was no doubt in my mind there was going to be major political change, because people will debate all the policy issues out there, but at the end of the day, when people vote, they vote their pocketbook. They always have. They always will.
When they voted, though, all of those numbers were down.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's the crazy thing. Inflation, we just had the number today. It's 2.6% inflation. That's not scary. You're right. Mortgage rates have been sticky. Fear of future inflation and deficits holding them up, but they've come down from the peaks. So we didn't have inflation. We don't have unemployment. Unemployment's at record lows. One would have thought that the economy and the stock market was at all-time highs.
If it were the economy, Democrats would have won. No,
I think if it was an incumbent running, and I think it was a dichotomy that wasn't easy to compare for voters.
Okay.
But
then you are also believing then that lower taxes on companies and the wealthy, and tariffs, and maybe migration or getting immigrants out of the country to whatever degree, you think those will be positive levers on the economy going forward.
I don't think lower taxes on the wealthy is ever a good formula. I think lower tax rate on everyone has always been a good formula. So I would argue that the dichotomy of trying to figure out who gets the benefit of tax breaks is always a losing situation. But I think that the working individual, the individual that has been successful, the individual trying to be successful, I think that that catalyst encourages people to save more, because people get frustrated if they save more and then they have to spend more, whether it's capital gains tax, but whatever. It's a disincentive to invest. So to me, anything we do in our tax structure that will help people, encourage people to save and invest, it's always been a good thing.
You know, the president, or there's been some talk about, or actually president-elect has said something about being able to have more influence over the Fed. Do you think that Powell has done a good job, not originally, maybe keeping rates too low for too long, but in the last couple of years, bringing inflation down?
I wouldn't give him an A. I don't know that I'd give him a B, maybe a C+. I think he's done an okay job. I think what I'd give him an A in is the independence of the Fed. I think he's made it very, very clear, and I applaud him for that. I don't think that they move fast enough. I think they should have been much more aggressive. Oh, well, heck, if they were, my interest rate outlook call would have been correct as well. I had eight calls, you know,
like
so obviously we're not aligned in the way we view the world. But I think he wasn't aggressive enough. So I think that the way my take is the way the Fed now is it's the central bank of the world. The whole world is interconnected. Everyone's waiting for the Fed to do what it does, so everyone else basically reflects what we do. So there's much more urgency to do the right thing and do it faster than there ever was before.
So should the president have much influence over that?
I think the president will always try to have influence over that, but I think the beauty of the Federal Reserve System is to not have influence.
Advice to the administration would be hands off.
My advice to the administration would be do what every administration is. You go to the pulpit, you pound the table, you try to get your views in place, but it's hands off.
All right. I'm going to toss up one more word that's really making headlines. Never been one of your things, I know. Bitcoin. Yeah. I mean, over 93,000 today.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't invest in it because I don't invest in things I don't understand. And I believe that anecdotal evidence is probably better than anything else. And look, I came down from the suburbs today in an Uber car. And you know what my Uber driver is talking about? His Bitcoin investment. So if ever I needed proof that Bitcoin is, you know, it's not a currency. Okay. It is not a currency. It may be when I'm dead and gone, but right now it's an investment, and not just any investment.
No, it's a speculation.
It's an extremely volatile investment.
Okay.
Everyone wants to talk about when it's up 3,000%. No one wants to talk about it at the cocktail party when it's down 3,000%.
So Uber driver's feeling pretty good. But your Uber driver's feeling pretty good today.
Yeah, today he is.
I wonder if you should tell him get out now while you can.
We don't give that kind of trading advice. But let me say this: every year, you may not give your number or your secret sauce today. Everybody at the Executives Club wants to hear it January 14th. But in past years, you have come up with an interesting investment. Like a couple of years ago, it's embarrassing, but I had no idea what esports was. And you made a whole big deal about that. Then I wrote a column, and then people came to me from all over the country. Tell me, what about esports? I said, wait, I just learned myself. And last year, was that only last year, ChatGPT?
Yeah.
I mean, now everything is Perplexity, and we know everything. It's not even a year. But honestly, I didn't know anything about ChatGPT last year. So is there a crazy one you're about to come up with for this year in January?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I'm a big believer that it's these big mega trends that really, you know, help you see what's going on. It's not that I have information no one else has. I've trained myself to see what everyone else has seen, but to think what no one else has thought. You know, I mean, that's just the key to being successful. You know, everyone in investing will always argue, like, is the glass half empty or is the glass half full? I don't get into that argument. I just see where the glass is made and invest in that company. You know? so you just want to look at things differently than everyone
else. So two things. Do you have an industry, a trade, a gadget that you like? And where do you think the Dow is going to finish?
No numbers. You can't give it out. You can just say higher or lower.
It's going to shock people. It's going higher. And I'll be back to share that number. And there's something really, really big.
Higher in the close of 2025, we're talking.
Yeah, yes.
Because you're going to make that prediction
in
January higher,
and
2025.
It's going higher. And there's a really, really big thing, but it's actually kind of interesting because it's not big.
We'll wait until January for that.
I love it.
But it's really big, but it's not big.
And if you want to hear that in-person forecast, it's January 14th this year. The Executives Club, executives, plural, executivesclub.org. I don't know what the tickets cost. They're on sale now. They're not expensive. Please come to that lunch and you can hear Dr. Bob. But the next day, will you come on our show?
Absolutely, positively.
Okay.
It's a pleasure to see you here. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Great being here.
Dr. Bob Frelich is the owner of the King County Cougars baseball team. 7 books about the world of finance, 40 years on Wall Street, and in our studio on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Grubhub has been sold. Wonder Group is buying the food delivery service from Just Eat Takeaway for $650 million. That's a fraction of the company's sale price from just 4 years ago. Just Eat Takeaway bought Grubhub in 2021 for $7.3 billion. Wonder Group operates 30 storefronts in New York and Philadelphia. It also operates a food delivery app. It plans to continue operating the Grubhub app and will add some of Grubhub's partner restaurants to the Wonder app. The sale is expected to close in the first quarter of next year. Woodridge-based Home Run Inn will create an independent board to help the family-owned pizza company grow. Cranes reports the board will include 5 to 7 members, including several family members, and should be in place early next year. Home Run says the board will offer independent perspective and expertise to help the company transition to its next chapter. Independent boards like this can provide guidance on everything from mergers to going public. They can also help mediate family disputes. Home Run Inn operates 9 restaurant locations in the Chicago area and has about 500 employees in 40 states. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And here's a man who wants to talk about his girls.
Yeah, my girls weigh roughly 800 pounds and stand 44 inches tall.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll hear more from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, back to the phone.
I'm Zaylin Rowetter from Altamont, Illinois. I'm a Navy veteran. Started active duty in 1982. In 2007, I retired from the Navy as a reservist.
Zaylin is one of hundreds of military veterans farming in Illinois, and
I'm also the president of Farmer Veterans Coalition Illinois.
The coalition helps military veterans who are farming or who want to farm cut through the noise and red tape.
Instead of you having to fumble through the internet trying to figure out, okay, is there a grant here, is there a grant for this, or knowledge for this or that, we do the legwork because we have those connections that deal with this more. And then camaraderie. I mean, once you find somebody else that's doing the same thing you want to do, you start working with each other.
He says the Farmer Veteran Coalition of Illinois also helps run the Homegrown by Heroes marketing program. You can find out more about all of the help available, including beginning farmer training, links to help connect farmers looking for land, and farm incubators, mental health resources, and agri-ability resources to help farmers with injuries or illness. All of that at IllinoisFarmerVeterans.org. Now, about his girls.
Yeah. My girls weigh roughly 800 pounds and stand 44 inches tall.
He's talking about some of the livestock he raises, an imported breed called Dexter cows.
Irish house cow is what they called them.
Because they don't grow very big, about half the size of the popular American breeds.
So they would graze them in their backyard and then they would live on their back porch. But they are a dual purpose cow, so they are good milk and meat cow.
They have short legs, which is reflected in the name of Zaylin Rowetter's farm in southern Illinois, where he raises those cattle and pigs and chickens. The name of the farm is Short Legs and Eggs Farm, which you can find on Facebook. Any last words, Zaylin?
Yep. Look for the label, Homegrown by Heroes Illinois Products.
Will do. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage, Dr. Bob, has moved along. Terry is still here. WGN Radio News in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in a couple of minutes. If you just joined us, Dr. Bob Frelick, the chief strategist at Deutsche Bank and other places, 40 years on Wall Street. Terry, just in general, what was your take on what doctor said?
You know, I'm never going to second guess Dr. Bob because I've been interviewing him every year for the last 15 years. One year he was off. That was a strange year where stocks and bonds went down. But he's got such a great track record.
And he said looks next beyond, year it's going to be higher than it is
this
year.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear at the January 14th Executives Club forecast luncheon exactly how high.
I love
high
his optimism. Let's hope that he is right.
Even when the market was down in June, you know, back just down to where it started the year, it had been higher and it was 40,000. It went down. It was dropping. We had him on. He said, nope, I'm still sticking with 44,000.
We've been talking a lot on this show about Medicare because open enrollment is underway. Any new words of wisdom from you?
Let me tell you that those of you who signed up for my free one, I'm in the mood for it newsletter, which I haven't sent out in a while, but I did over the weekend. And all the posts on the Ask Terry blog at terrysavage.com came up with such incredible questions. And let me not pass myself as a Medicare drug expert. I just knew it was important to wake everybody up. But there were such sophisticated questions. I went to our friend Tom Dillon of JT Medicare Solutions, and I collated all the questions. And I've just posted a new item under my columns with Q&A from Tom Dillon. Now look, 90% of you will be fine just going to Medicare.gov, putting in your drugs, searching out the best Part D drug program. Everything is upside down, as I've said this year, because they've changed all the drugs, the formularies, the copays,
right.
Everything, even if you loved it last year, you have to review. I found out that this year I'll pay zero. It's not that I have so many drugs and there's a WellCare plan that's for generic drugs, it's nothing. But others of you are going to find higher copays or some drugs not covered. In my Q&A with Tom, I asked him things like, what if your drug's not on any formulary? Well, guess what? It's not subject to the $2,000 cap if it's not on the formulary. But he comes up with ways to
get around
manufacturers'
that.
Programs or drug RX, the kinds of programs. And he talks about the kind of drugs. Here's another loophole that someone wrote about, a horrible thing. When you're in a nursing home, they use their pharmacy and you don't get to benefit from a Part D program. That's another horrible thing that came up.
So you're writing about all this on your blog?
A big Q&A under at the top of terrysavage.com. It says Q&A for Part D drugs. I think we've answered most of your questions.
By the way, about Dr. Bob, just one more minute here. He is optimistic for a variety of reasons. The economy is good anyway. He likes the direction of interest rates. He believes the Fed's in good hands, even though he gives him a C+. It's pretty good right now. And he also said less regulation is attractive to Wall Street. Some of you said stuff like this. What exactly does less regulation mean? Does it mean lenders will create another Big Short and crash our economy? 708 said, au contraire, it infuriates me that the new administration wants to eliminate or greatly reduce financial regulations. Many of those are necessary consumer protections.
The pendulum swings. I understand those sentiments exactly. Yeah. The pendulum swings. But look, we have the threat of Spirit Airlines going bankrupt now because they wouldn't let them do a merger. And that was just because, well, we don't allow mergers. So there's a sense on the part of some that the regulatory environment was too much and maybe not enough. This whole Bitcoin thing is because the chairman of the SEC refused to officially define whether it was a security, a commodity, a collectible, a currency.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of political wrangling on both sides of the aisle. Let me just say this about the year ahead. It's really going to be interesting. It's going to be volatile and you won't be bored. That's for sure. That's a savage truth.
That's Terry Savage.